Now, you know, we find that emotional abuse is a way to control another person by using emotions to criticize, to embarrass, sometimes to shame, blame, and even to manipulate another person. So in general, a relationship is emotionally abusive when there's a consistent pattern of abusive words and bullying behaviors, you know, that actually wears down on a person's self-esteem and it undermines their mental health. To take us through this discussion, we have Counselor Sister Suraya Nawab. Sister Suraya, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jazakallah for joining us this morning.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and jazakallah for having me.
You know, we have many different types of abuse. We normally speak of physical abuse. We normally speak of verbal abuse, sexual abuse. But emotional abuse is another important part of abuse that sadly takes place. Is emotional abuse one of the hardest types of abuse to recognize?
So generally, when we talk about any form of abuse from that is violating anybody, any person, it is more difficult to identify emotional, and verbal abuse is even easier to identify than emotional or psychological abuse. And obviously, physical abuse is the easiest to identify, especially with, you know, clinical symptoms of marks and cuts and things like that. So yes, emotional abuse is very much more difficult to identify. Sometimes even people who are in the emotionally abusive relationship find themselves not understanding what is happening to them or being confused. So maybe the best way to explain it is that, unlike physical abuse, emotional abuse is about belittling the person. So the purpose of emotional abuse is to create a psychological or emotional weakness in the person by the perpetrator, and they do this by undermining the victim's or the survivor's confidence, self-esteem, and self-worth. And so, if we read it as that definition, then the true goal of most of the abusers or perpetrators that are stereotypical is to make people feel weak. They make them feel so inferior and so damaged that they actually stop questioning themselves. And they probably, in narcissistic abuse, they would defer all their thinking and their mindset and decision making to the perpetrator. So it can go as far as that. I think we need to understand the dire consequences of verbal and psychological and emotional abuse.
Sister, you spoke about belittling a person. What is the impact of emotional abuse on self-esteem?
Okay, so when you talk about belittling a person, it includes humiliation, it includes criticizing the person, it includes name-calling, it includes character assassination. And so if I'm just telling you these things, yelling at a person, public embarrassment is a big one for emotional abuse. And so, and the question is, then, how do we recognize it? Then these are the things that we should look out for. Sometimes even, you know, a perpetrator would fob it off and say, make a comment, for example, and then say, oh, no, I was just joking, you know. Either way, that would make the victim or the survivor feel completely foolish or stupid. And so that all these sort of ways in which a perpetrator uses emotional and psychological abuse, you can see how it denigrates the person to an extent where you probably just lose all self-confidence, because there's an insult to yourself as a person, there's an insult to your appearance, insult to the way you speak. Belittling, for example, if a woman has been successful in anything or has accomplished anything, then the perpetrator would just pull her down completely and say that, you know what, your achievements mean nothing. Look at that person. Look at the other person. Look at me, you know, or look at my family members. So you can see how the sort of dismissiveness, the sort of sarcasm can really make a person feel down and self-esteem being extremely low, with the result that self-confidence is broken, with the result that it fractures the emotional stability of this relationship.
Sister Sreya, you know, emotionally abusive people display unrealistic expectations. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Okay, so emotionally, people who emotionally abuse others often have a sense of unrealistic expectations, because what they're looking for in their partner, what they want their spouse to be, or what they want their colleague to be, because emotional abuse is not only specific to marriages. It can be found in different places where relationships are thriving. So maybe in a work situation, in terms of colleagues, sometimes even teacher and a student, learner, that can also be emotionally abusive. But mostly it's found in close, intimate relationships. So we often go to the marriage. And when we look at that, then we can see the disparity between what the perpetrator would expect, which is very unrealistic, in terms of this person needs to be extremely, like, the perfect person, right? And yet, the more the survivor tries to be the person that the perpetrator wants her to be or him to be, the person keeps on abusing emotionally or psychologically, abusing the other even more. So you'll never reach that expected outcome or the expected personality that the perpetrator wants you to reach, because the perpetrator will always be shifting the goalposts further and further. So in terms of expectations of what he or she wants in that relationship or of the next person. So it always remains unrealistic, because nothing will ever be good enough for the perpetrator.
So this goes hand in hand with emotionally abusive people tending to invalidate a person. Are there any examples of this?
Okay. So, as I said earlier, most of the time, humiliation or negating the person themselves and what they say and who they stand for and their values. Okay. So it's that sort of negating to a very high limit. So this person that the perpetrator is trying to control actually feels like nobody, no one at all, to the extent that they often forget who they are as human beings, their own core identity, their own core values, all that. They lose connection with themselves. So some of the other examples are criticizing the person that you are abusing, the perpetrator is abusing. Some of the other things that also would go with describing how this person would react or respond is control and shame. The perpetrator will always try and control and shame the spouse or the partner or the colleague that they're emotionally abusing. So, and now these days it's even gone as far as digital spying. So, you know, you can go onto people's Google timelines. You can retrieve information if you have their passwords and things like that. So it will be to that extent as well. And that is a clear indication of how social media is abused. We know how important social media is. In some instances, it's not even a luxury anymore. We need, especially in this COVID world, we need it. But when it is abused to the extent that people use it to denigrate others, to spy on others, to discredit other people, then obviously that's an abuse of social media. So a perpetrator would go as far as doing that. Financial control is a big description of the perpetrator, because it's all about control. Okay, and then obviously there are the normal things like outbursts, and then also either starting off with physical abuse, with an action of physical abuse, and it develops into emotional, verbal, and psychological abuse, or It starts off with emotional and verbal abuse and psychological abuse, and the person acts out or responds in a way that they want to maintain a sense of dignity, and then it ends up into physical abuse. So there's a cycle, and although we're talking specifically about emotional abuse, we must remember that all sorts of abuse together would be prevalent in a certain relationship. So it's not that a person will, however, there may be cases, and we find this a lot from Islamic care line perspective. Mm. We find this over the 28 years that we've been servicing the community with counseling, is that the emotional and psychological abuse is far more prevalent than the physical abuse.
Mm.
And, you know, it has a cultural, a socio-cultural perspective as well. It's not just a Eurocentric approach where physical abuse and emotional abuse would be sort of have some margin of relationship. But in terms of the culture that we live in and that we live by, it's much easier to emotionally and psychologically abuse the next person or your partner, your spouse or your colleague or whoever it may be. However, the trends also from the data we collected, the care line shows that even the emergence of the trends in physical abuse have been increasing over the last few years. The other thing I need to mention here is that by far women and children are more emotionally, verbally and psychologically as well as physically abused. However, there is an emerging trend. You'll find most counselors in their personal capacities, psychologists within the community, and I'm talking about our Muslim community where we practice. There is an emergence of women, and I suppose that's a subject for another day. There is an emergence of women abusing males. So although I must mention that the stats show a complete disparity, and women and children are more abused, much more abused than men. But I just wanted to add that we should be aware of the fact. And in terms of stopping it, I don't know if that was your next question, but I know we'll run out of time. I just want to say that we need to, you know, we talk about GBV and we talk about gender dynamics and we talk about these abusive tendencies and things like that, and we look at trends and we look at 16 days of activism every November to December and so on. But I think there's a whole lot of support groups running at the moment in terms of women who have been through this, and then there are legal implications and talaq implications and all those sort of things.
Mm.
I think we should be more proactive and look at how we can actually break the cycle. Mm. How we can break the silence, and the Jamiat for the last 2 years has worked very closely with Islamic Care Line, and we've had some very good programs creating awareness about gender-based violence in any form. But I think we need more of that. We need to look at preventative measures. And I'll just add one here. I think it's very important how we bring up our children, and especially looking at the statistics in our community, then I think looking at how we bring up our male children, the boy child, and what we teach them about abusing anybody. So it will go into bullying. You know, children at school get bullied. Little children in preschool and nursery school bully each other, and you'll find one emerging as a bully. So I think our overall perspective needs to change in terms of how we socialize our kids, both the girl and the boy child, and also our language around GBV and violence against anybody, women or children. I think our language around it should also be tipped, and in those ways we can start finding a way in which we can actually deal with it in a more proactive way, so that we can actually stop the scourge in our community, because it's leading to many, many dysfunctional families, many fractured relationships, many broken homes, and many more divorces.
Sister Suraya, Jazakallah for your time. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala reward you. It was a very interesting discussion. Maybe we can continue the discussion at another time.
Inshallah, we can. Whatever is necessary to help and to be able to mitigate this very difficult psychosocial issue in our community, inshallah, we can do that.